Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and I'm here today to speak a little bit about online writing instruction and the joys of research. You're going, I don't really believe you. Well, believe it. It's a lot of fun, and it can be one of the most rewarding things you'll ever do. But before I start, I'd like to apologize for my voice. You may not believe this, it is almost back, but it's not quite there. It was really, really gone last week. But this week, I'm able to talk a little bit, so I'm thrilled that there's not just like this really crazy froggy thing coming out of my sound, coming out of my vocal cords. Anyway, so here we go. Some thoughts on online writing and writing instruction. Although many students would prefer to think of good writing as something innate, and you have to admit, a lot of people say, oh, I was just a born writer, or they're a born writer. In other words, it's innate. Or better, they'd like to think of bad writing as something they have been inoculated against. The reality is that writing is a skill developed over time. So we can say that writing is not simply a series of talented moves or gestures. To write well requires one to think well. The writer must organize his or her argument, and on a more fundamental level, he or she must be able to simultaneously consider all the factors that go into constructing a good essay, report, article, or paper. Not only does the learner need to be able to analyze and organize facts and figures, he or she must also consider the purpose of the activity. I'd like to emphasize that this is even more the case in graduate writing and research, because you have to constantly think of the ultimate task, which is the thesis that will need to be done eventually. That is, if you expect to graduate. Anyway, some of the questions that should be invoked include the following. What is the ultimate aim of your writing task? What do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish with your piece of discourse that you're going to be producing? Also, who is the intended audience? What characteristics do they have? In addition, you have to envision the writing task from the point of view of the author's motives, the audience, and, this is very important, the social context. In a larger frame, from a different position, it's very important to understand what is often referred to as the, quote, rhetorical situation. You may have heard it, you may not have. That was a term that was first coined by Lloyd Bitzer. He was a professor of rhetoric, and his research interests focused on strategies used in persuasive discourse and the construction of effective arguments. According to Bitzer, a rhetorical situation occurs when an author, audience, and a social context converge to create a rhetorical act. Now you may ask, what on earth is a rhetorical act? Well, that is an act of writing or speaking or producing some kind of discourse that has as its aim the act of persuasion. The rhetorical situation is commonly depicted in the rhetorical triangle. The discourse that is being produced is considered the medium, because it is through this that the author, audience, and social context come together, each with a potentially mediating influence. In this case, you may say, what do you mean by a mediating influence? What I mean by that is something each side of the rhetorical triangle has the ability to influence or change, to mediate the impact, the belief system, the acts, whatever, of the audience. In other words, mediation refers to the power that it exerts, that the argument exerts or the discourse exerts, to subtly change or overtly co-opt meaning. Now please keep in mind that the rhetorical triangle changes shape depending on the kind of discourse being produced. For example, academic writing would be depicted in a different way than advertising. In the 1970s and 80s, numerous articles were written about the rhetorical situation, and it achieved almost mythical status in terms of its efficacy to explain how the dynamics of persuasion work in the phenomenal world. In other words, it became the one way, the most efficient way to explain how people persuade people, how people come to believe the persuasive act on people, things, beings. They were just, and this of course refers back to Aristotle and his rhetoric that really codified and became the sort of absolute pillar of rhetoric, along with a long, long list of other rhetoricians over the years. Now, in the 70s and 80s, the discussions were expanded with the notions of Jacques Derrida, who, with the concept of différence, which was discussed in his 1981 essay, Semiology and Grammatology, interjects the interplay of psychology and social context. And in doing so, he demonstrates how internalized notions of authority further exert influence on how meaning or meanings are generated. In doing so, he foregrounds the act of interpretation. And that act of interpretation, which is either conscious or unconscious, is very critical. Derrida emphasizes that there are numerous factors that bear upon how the idea of the humanistic subject comes into being. The subject becomes deconstructed once its ontological pillars are undermined, and as Derrida points out, there are many ways to collapse those ontological moorings. With the approach of différence in mind, as texts are produced and interpreted, it is useful to look at the activities that take place on the edges of the rhetorical triangle and to look at how relationships are forged. For example, the notion of identity is destabilized once we realize how it is not an absolute, but is instead a protean metamorphosing element, which changes in response to dreams or fantasies, social pressure, which can create tensions between the ideal and the real, the flawed original, and its perfect simulacra. The subject, which in this case would be writing and speech, are likewise destabilized by différence. In 2005, with email, the internet, text messaging via BlackBerries, handhelds, cell phones, the model continues to be useful. What tends to add variables are subcategories of context and authorship. For example, the context may be synchronous, asynchronous, or a combination of both. What this means is that the realm of academic writing has expanded, and it is more vital than ever for the writer to understand the conventions of the particular genre or occasion and how they shape reader expectations. Writing for college is a fairly complex task, and the conventions are not always expressed as clearly as one might hope. For that reason, it is absolutely vital for a learner to have taken at least one course that focuses exclusively on academic writing. This will form the core for skills, knowledge, and analytical thinking, which will be expanded and built upon as the student progresses. Although there is wide latitude in the degree of formality found in writing for college, the boundaries for a particular writing occasion can be very narrowly constrained. This can cause frustration for the learner who has not yet acquired the conceptual, analytical, or problem-solving skills to be able to successfully negotiate the rhetorical situation. That said, there is no reason to fear academic writing. The same basic building blocks reappear in many places and are applied in many situations with modifications made in accordance with the writing occasion. Now, I'm going to finish this little introduction to writing. I hope that you found it intriguing, scintillating, stimulating, or maybe soothing. I don't know. But I want to welcome you to writing and to say that it's an exciting world. There are so many different ways of creating and communicating meaning. We use words. We use organization, which creates a kind of symbol system. We use symbols, we use signs, we invoke signs. We do all sorts of things. We analyze our audience, we imagine what the expectations are. We look at how other people have created meaning in a certain setting or situation. We look at rules of evidence. We think of how to persuade through passion, pathos, logos, logic. All these things are very wonderful. And I want to tell you again that I'm deeply appreciative of your interest in writing. And I hope that you will embark upon this as an adventure. And if you have any questions, please be in touch with me. So thank you. This is Susan Smith Nash. And these are some preliminary thoughts on academic writing. Bye.